Will the clerk call the roll, please?
Ms. Hoppy?
Here.
McDavid?
Here.
Mr. Schmidt?
Here.
Mr. Thornhill?
Here.
Mr. Kessel?
Here.
Mr. Dudley?
Here.
Ms. Nansen?
Here.
We have minutes from the council meeting of December 5th, 2011. If there are no corrections, may I have a motion and a second for approval?
Second.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. Are there any extractions or corrections to the agenda? If not, may I have a motion and a second for approval?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, say nay. Welcome to the meeting. We have several opportunities for public comment during the public hearings, old business, new business. There is an open comment section at the end of the meeting. Each individual is entitled to 3 minutes. As you approach 3 minutes, you'll get a little warning light with the red light on the podium. If you represent an organization or a group that is a principal in the issue, you may ask for and are entitled to 5 minutes. The first item on the agenda is the swearing in of our new manager of cultural affairs. Will Mr. Stevens come to the podium?
I, Chris Stevens,
do solemnly
swear
that I possess all qualifications
for the office of
manager of the Office of Cultural Affairs,
manager of the Office of Cultural Affairs
for the City of Columbia, Missouri,
City of Columbia, Missouri,
that I am not subject
to any of the disqualifications set forth in the charter
of the City of Columbia,
and that I will support the Constitution
and laws of the United States,
and
of the State of Missouri,
and the Charter and ordinances,
of the City of Columbia,
and that I will faithfully discharge,
the duties of my office,
So
help me God.
Congratulations. Thank you very much.
Can I just have you sign? Yes.
Thank you. You know, let me just make a comment. It's a proud moment for me to welcome you to the team. This process took a little while longer than normal recruitments, but I'm really pleased that you stuck with it.
It was worth it.
Yeah. And one thing I'm very excited about are the ideas that you've brought to the table, not the least of which is a lot of marketing of what's great about culture in Columbia, as well as a long-term financial sustainability of the Office of Cultural Affairs. Those are tremendous strengths, and I look forward to what you're going to bring the city.
Thank you. Looking forward to it. Thank
all of you. Congratulations, Mr. Stevens. The Mayor's Committee on Physical Fitness is a mayor's appointment. I'm going to appoint Ted Glasgow and Kyle Oberweather to this committee. We have two applicants for three vacancies in the Boone County Community Service Advisory Commission. May have a motion and a second to appoint Michael Fletcher and Thomas Seagraves.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. We have one applicant for the Columbia Special Business District Board. May I have a motion to appoint Alan Moore?
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. We have one applicant for the Columbia Vision Commission. May I have a motion to appoint Paul Prevo?
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. There is one applicant for the Environment and Energy Commission. May have a motion and a second to appoint Ken Midkiff.
So moved.
Second.
Any Any discussion? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. We have one applicant for the Finance Advisory and Audit Committee. May I have a motion and a second to appoint Douglas Tarwater?
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. For the Firefighters Retirement Board, we have one applicant. May I have a motion and a second to appoint Nicholas Kenny?
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. We have one applicant for the Police Retirement Board. May I have a motion and a second to appoint Matthew Pitzer?
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. We have two applicants for the Sustainable Farms and Communities Board. May I have a motion and a second to appoint Christopher Dome and Tom Repetto?
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. Those who have contacted the city manager's office by noon on the Wednesday prior to a council meeting can speak at the beginning of the meeting on any topic, not on the agenda. Only two people can speak on the same topic. Tonight, we have three requests. Each individual is entitled to 5 minutes. I would point out that the council does not address these issues at this time. However, we may and often do make comments at the end of the meeting during the council comments section. This is not an opportunity for the speakers to debate or challenge or question council members. I will point out that all council members, all of us, welcome anyone who wishes to question, debate, or challenges. We are available for face-to-face meetings, telephone calls, or email. I'll invite Chris Mangano to come forward. Good evening.
Ladies and gentlemen, I will be very brief. I wanted to basically create a dialogue. I went away on vacation for the Thanksgiving holiday and came back home. My place had been robbed, burgled, actually. And I talked to this the city police, and it turns out there were 22 of the time I was gone, there were 22 places that were burgled. I think that is a serious problem for a city of this size. I've lived in Columbia now a year. I went to undergrad here many years ago. And I just want to create a dialogue in between what is going on and what is being done about it. I'm just a little concerned, and I've never been a victim before, and it's not a good feeling. And I would hope that we can do something about this. And I thank you for your time.
Thank you. Let's address this at the end of the meeting. I'll invite Mike Onofrio to come forward.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. I've spoken to most of you regarding my concerns regarding a proposal that you'll be voting on in early 2012. It has to do with the $5 million federal grant Forget About Columbia's Bicycle Project. This $5 million grant is an extension of the $22 million grant for bicycle and pedestrian trails in Columbia. The City and Columbia Public Works has compiled a list of 15 projects for the city to determine in, for the City Council, you guys, to determine in early 2012 on how to split that $5 million. There's not enough money to go to all the projects. On that list is a project which our neighborhood, and I'm the acting as a spokesman for that neighborhood, feels is not necessary. The project I'm speaking of is the County House Branch Trail, Phase 2, C3. from Radcliffe Drive to Cowan Drive. Let me give you a little bit of history. In 2006, the County Branch Trail from Twin Lakes to Cowan Drive went to a vote for City Council. None of you guys, it's all different council. And our neighborhood group lobbied City Council not to build the section through our property. And Council agreed and chose just to build the trail from Twin Lakes to Stadium. There are many reasons for that, cost, terrain, floodplain, condemnation issues, and privacy issues. During the 2000 debate, our neighborhood group provided Get About with two alternate routes. on the five, for the $5 million proposals, get about included one and rejected another going through Kiwanis Park, which is right parallel to my area. But even with the alternate routes, Gettabout still wants to go through Radcliffe to Cowan Drive with the trail. In 2006, Gettabout's goal was to get a trail from Twin Lakes to the Ark, and they have that. They have the routes to do that, yet they want to spread their wings and use eminent domain and condemn the property, take it away from us to build the trail. I've lived in this subdivision for 50 years. Just recently, I saw hundreds of trees, most old growth, be stripped from my property when they came through with the sewer project that kind of went just right through it and just turned the soil upside down. It's all rock on top now. And I did that as my donation to the city. I didn't want it to happen. I says, okay. And I told Wendy Lister, I says, you can do that. That's fine. But when the trail comes up, we're going to come back. And here it is, you know. So it's like double whammy for us. And I have a degree in recreation park administration. I've worked as an intern with the Parks Management Department. I helped develop the portfolio for the MKT Trail back when that started. And I understand the need for trails, but this one just does not make sense. Please take careful consideration on this vote when it comes up. It should come up in February, early March. I have a petition and have plans and have planned, have many signatures already and plan to have hundreds and up to 1,000 signatures in early 2012. I've spent long hours with Ted Curtis. I've talked to Mike Hood and other public officials trying to work out an alternative route. They insist it is your decision. They are not going to change. I mean, there's nothing more I can do with them. It's going to come to you. You're going to determine if this trail goes through. So I want to get as much information as I can to you, and I hope the petitions, talking to you now ahead of time, suggesting the neighbors to send you emails is the direction to go about, and looking forward to seeing you again in the future. Thanks a lot for your time.
Thank you for the heads up, and send up us as much information as you can.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Onofrio. Yeah. Mr. Justin Thomas.
Good evening. Thank you for your time, your hard work, your commitment to the citizens of Columbia, and I also want to acknowledge the Office of Neighborhood Services, and in particular Bill Canton, Verna LeBoy, and everybody that's working with them on revitalizing the neighborhood associations in the First Ward. I think it's a really valuable effort, and I think the city will benefit from increased participation from the people in this part of the city. A few observations that I have related to the CDBG and the home programs and citizen participation. The documentation on these things is pretty intimidating, so I can only share observations of what I've seen. But the CDBG and the home programs focus, there's a lot of money allocated to housing issues. And I just want to point out that it's important to keep in mind how the existing social circumstances are affected by such a focus on housing. And I've been a resident for a little over 4 years, and I've noticed marked improvements in the housing conditions in different areas of our neighborhoods. But I also want to point out that there are times when the policing of neighborhoods and issuing nuisance notices about things like grass being too tall can upset some of us when we see that there are other problems, bigger problems, and we don't know how they're being dealt with. And in particular, derelict properties, we know it's a large, complicated issue, but when something's already in bad condition and they're used for training exercises and left in worse condition, then, and we don't know what the plans are to deal with that, it's a little bit upsetting. And we're left to wonder if energy and resources couldn't be focused in dealing with the bigger problems first, and then the small ones might work themselves out in relatively short order. The second thing is citizen participation. It seems like the city has a difficult challenge here, in particular where in areas where citizens feel like they've been disenfranchised. And I think the city makes considerable efforts to promote participation in planning, and most activities like here are open to input at different points in time. But from my experience in studying these processes and attending some of the ongoing planning exercises, I think that open invitations might not be enough. And therefore, I was, it caught my attention when somebody at one of these presentations mentioned a survey for 2012. And I did a little bit more looking into it, and I found actually this resolution that was supposed to be open for a public hearing in October, I believe. And I haven't found where it actually was put on the agenda. But anyway, I just wanted to point out that in this, in the discussion section of this resolution, it states that in order to enhance communication with the general public, particularly with minorities and other disadvantaged population, staff's implementing the following additional means of communication. And one is a listserv. And the second one, the second point says, as a part of the identification of community development needs, the citizen participation plan will include a survey that will supplement public hearings. The survey will allow general public to express their opinions without having to attend a public hearing. And then later on in the fourth section on planning objectives, the objective 42 refers to this survey, and it says that it intends to conduct a formal survey of the low to moderate income segment concerning their highest priority barriers to affordable housing. Then it says no goal is projected for 2012, although a survey was not completed or planned in 2011, but is being planned for 2012, assuming funds are available. So this is a little bit confusing to me, and I just wanted to point that out. And then I went back and I looked in the community development action plans, and such a survey has been mentioned since 2010 in various places, and it's never been planned for and obviously not implemented. But that's essentially it. I don't know if such a survey would be helpful, in particular if it focuses on obstacles to affordable housing, because I think we're pretty well aware of what most of those are already. But given my observation of limited participation and in ongoing planning activities, it might be a good idea that we think about alternative ways of including ideas and concerns of neighborhood residents in development activities. So I appreciate your time.
Thank you, Mr. Thomas.
Thank you. And forgive me if you've already done this, but if you could email what your remarks, if you've got them written out, that would be great.
We'll move to old business. Will the clerk read 348-11?
Council Bill 348-11 is an ordinance authorizing a consulting contract with PedNet Coalition Incorporated for implementing activities associated with the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation Health Impact Assessments Grant, appropriating funds and fixing the time when this ordinance shall become effective. Second reading.
This is a grant that will be passed through the city. Is that correct? $200,000
grant?
No. To hire a health impact assessment coordinator, organize workshop, and conduct social marketing. We need to, there is an amendment sheet with this. So may I have a motion and a second to amend per the amendment sheet?
So moved.
For a second?
Second.
Any discussion on the amendment? All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed say nay. Staff, comments?
I think Stephanie is here to overview it. I believe this is more of a fix to an appropriation that we anticipate.
This item and the next item, there's just an adjustment. Those are your amendment sheets that are changing account numbers so that we can actually deposit the revenue where it goes. This agreement is PedNet is contracting with the city. They've received funding from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation for the purpose of our role in this process. And I see Ian Thomas is here. But our role in this process will be health impact assessment and building that capacity here in Columbia. So we're excited to continue our longstanding partnership with PedNet.
Any questions from council? Would anyone from the public like to speak? Seeing none, any discussion? Please call the roll.
Council Bill 348-11 as amended. Ms. Hoppe?
Yes.
Mr. McDavid?
Yes.
Mr. Schmidt?
Yes.
Mr. Thornhill?
Yes.
Mr. Kestle?
Yes.
Mr. Dudley?
Yes.
Ms. Anthony?
Yes.
Please read 349-11.
Council Bill 349-11 is an ordinance authorizing a contract for services with Central Missouri Community Action for implementation of the Missouri Foundation for Health Support for Local Policy Change Grant appropriating funds and fixing the time when this ordinance shall become effective. Second reading.
This is, again, a pass-through grant, $99,462 from Missouri Foundation of Health to Central Missouri Community Action, and they are contracting with the city, similarly, right, to hire an HIA coordinator, arrange training for the HIA coordinator, organize health impact assessment workshop, educate policymakers on the importance of HIAs as a policy tool, conduct social marketing, and complete and present health impact assessment of transit expansion to policy and decision makers. We have an amendment sheet, so I'll need a motion and a second to amend 349 per the amendment sheet.
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion on the amendments? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say nay. Any staff comments?
Same.
Any questions from council? Would anyone from the public like to speak? Please call the roll.
Council Bill 349-11 as amended. Ms. Hoppe?
Yes.
Mr. McDavid?
Yes.
Mr. Schmidt?
Yes.
Mr. Thornhill?
Yes.
Mr. Kestle?
Yes.
Mr. Dudley?
Yes.
Ms. Anthony?
Yes.
Please read 353-11.
Council Bill 353-11 is an ordinance establishing new group insurance premiums for employee and retiree COBRA health and dental care plans and fixing the time when this ordinance shall become effective. Second reading.
Staff, please.
This item is really our sort of annual endeavor to establish group insurance premiums for our employees and retirees, health and dental plans. So fundamentally, there are not hardly any changes, and the cost side there are. And if you have detailed questions, the expert is here, Margrace Buckler. But I think that's a general summary.
Any staff questions? Council questions? I have a couple questions. This sort of relates to, you know, being new to public sector, coming from the private sector. I am indifferent as to how employees choose to be compensated. I mean, it's a pie. There's obviously wages. There's obviously health benefits. And there is obviously retirement benefits. Now, really, you guys can pick it. One thing that I am struck with in the public sector is, I don't know if I want to use the word generosity, but I will use the word generosity of post-retirement health benefits, which is something that is really missing in the private sector. And, I mean, like I said, you guys are smart enough to pick to slice the pie any way you want to. It's just that, for me, it seems as though 30-year-old water and light workers are subsidizing health care benefits to people in retirement. And maybe if that's the culture, that's the culture. And I know it is nationally, but that's just something that's I want to point out.
Well, we did go through a process about 5 years ago to work on that. We moved our Medicare-eligible retirees out of our health plan, and we now just sponsor a program for them. And we have changed the rate structure for our pre-65 retirees, so they are paying more than they used to. But you're right. They are subsidized by the active employee rates.
I want to I don't know if this is should be more of a comment or a question, but I know that I had directed late last week a representative from Group Benefit Services to Mike about the third-party administration issues.
We've met with them.
And I have no idea if their assertions are accurate.
We've sent their information to our consultant.
All right, because They do Austin and Boonville, and they're trying to get our business. They're entrepreneurs.
And we're under a contract right now, so we've told them that we'll look at what they're – we've sent it to our – we contract with United Healthcare as our third-party administrator.
Right. Their criticism, as you know, is that when you bid in July, that's not enough time for people to come in and reassess the whole third-party administration deal?
We've sent everything to our consultant.
And of course, their assertion is that they think there are hundreds of thousands of dollars on the table. But I am confident that staff will take a very serious look at this, because
certainly, any
substantial savings we can make here is revenue that flows right into employee compensation.
Right. We are looking at it.
Any other comments?
Are these rates increased from last year?
No.
The same?
Yes.
Some employees end up paying slightly more, I think, and that's truing up of certain categories where they were more heavily subsidized than others.
Actually, we reduced the subsidies. We did not increase the rates.
Thank you. That's right.
The payment in lieu of salary increase you did several years ago does not change. That amount does not change.
I'm not sure what you're asking me.
The payment in for dependent care. Sorry. The payment in lieu of salary for dependent care. That does not change at all.
The subsidy amount?
Right.
No, the subsidies went down. That the city pays?
Yes.
The subsidies went down.
Because the rate went down?
No, because we adjusted them down.
Okay.
Any other questions? Would anyone from the public like to speak? Discussion. Please call the roll. May I have a motion and a second to amend 353-11 for the amendment sheet?
So moved.
Any discussion of the amendment? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say nay. Please call the roll.
Council Bill 353-11 as amended. Ms. Hoppe?
Yes.
Mr. McDavid?
Yes.
Mr. Schmidt?
Yes.
Mr. Thornhill?
Yes.
Mr. Kessel?
Yes.
Mr. Dudley?
Yes.
Ms. Anthony?
Yes.
Please read 355-11.
Council Bill 355-11 is an ordinance amending Chapter 19 of the City Code as it relates to personnel policies, procedures, rules, and regulations, and fixing the time when this ordinance shall become effective. Second reading.
Staff?
Another item that relates to employment rules for the city. So this item covers various changes to Chapter 19. These changes focus really on how departments set rules, regulations, how the city manager will promulgate rules. It adds time frames to the meet and confer process, which I will say are badly needed. And it really catches up with some of the IRS requirements we are supposed to comply with and now will. So having to do with jeans, dungarees or pants, whatever. So as some of the more, in my opinion, obscure IRS regulations we're truing up with. So really four not critical but important changes to Chapter 19.
Questions?
Are there going to be more changes to Chapter 19? I know we've discussed it as trying to possibly make it more user-friendly. Is this just dealing with these specific issues, and it may be we may do more changes to 19? I just want to make sure this is not it. The extent.
No, this is not it.
Thank you.
No. Okay. These are things we need to do right now.
Okay.
And I think in about 30 days we'll have a council meeting about setting some guiding principles moving forward into the next round. One of the great things about the meet and confer process is it's never over, but it's also one of the worst things about the meet and confer process. So having these sort of target dates will help us on an annual basis. It never ends the process, but it gives us, you know, some dates to shoot for. That's one of the important additions.
Under fiscal impact, it says this change will not result in an increased cost per employee this fiscal year.
Right. The jeans really become a taxable benefit. So for some of our employees, we provide jeans. It's a dirty job. It's tough on the clothes. You know, that's some of the strongest type clothing you can buy. But one of the benefits we provide is we will purchase those. IRS code, kind of like cell phones were a while ago, they've decided that because you can wear the jeans outside of work, they should be a taxable income to you rather than what in my mind it really is. So we have to charge the employees tax on the jeans.
The allowance amount is not changing. There's, it, net, and if we don't change the allowance next year, it won't change the amount.
My question is the word "this fiscal year." Does it, does it mean this change affects next year?
It affects the year we're in right now.
In all future years. I mean, we have to change how we do business. So we're moving from what it used to be, which is, you know, we would give you a voucher, I think, to go buy the jeans, to simply an allowance, like a cell phone allowance. And then it's a taxable line on your payroll check.
So any jeans that are purchased after October 1st of 2011?
Yeah, the bottom of the staff memo says fiscal impact, and it lists what's being spent on jeans, but I guess the change is the tax on the jeans.
Right.
There's no increased cost to the city.
Right.
But there is tax.
So tax on the jeans, and not even the jeans, just the amount over the IRS amount. So that's the only fiscal impact?
Right.
Okay.
Would anyone from the public like to speak? Any discussion? Please call the roll.
There's an amendment.
Missed another one?
Yeah. I'll move to amend it as set forth.
Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor of the amendment, please say aye.
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 Opposed, say nay. Please call the roll.
Council Bill 355-11, Ms. Hoppe?
Yes.
Mr. McDavid?
Yes.
Mr. Schmidt?
Yes.
Mr. Thornhill?
Yes.
Mr. Kespel?
Yes.
Mr. Dudley?
Yes.
Ms. Anthony?
Yes.
Please read the consent agenda bills.
Items on the consent agenda include bills 344-11, 345-11, 346-11, 347-11, 350-11, 351-11, 352-11, 354-11, and resolutions 213-11, 214-11, 215-11, 216-11, and 217-11.
Please call the roll.
Bills 344-11, 345-11, 346-11, 347-11, 350-11, 351-11, 352-11, 354-11, and resolutions 213-11, 214-11, 215-11, 216-11, and 217-11. Ms. Hoppe?
Yes.
Mr. McDavid?
Yes.
Mr. Schmidt?
Yes.
Mr. Thornhill?
Yes.
Mr. Kespel?
Yes.
Mr. Dudley?
Yes.
Ms. Anthony?
Yes.
Resolution 218-11 under new business.
Council Bill 218-11 is a resolution authorizing the temporary closure of Short Street between Broadway and Walnut Street for construction of a parking garage, hotel, and commercial building, allowing two city-owned surface parking lots to be used as temporary staging sites during the demolition and earthwork phases for the hotel.
Fairly self-explanatory. Staff, any comments?
No.
Questions from council?
I do. The ordinance indicates that the closing will start December 23rd, but the staff report said it would start January 1st. So is it the 23rd?
I would like for it to be January 1st.
And I'd move to amend the ordinance so it says January 1st instead of December 23rd.
For a second?
Second.
All in favor say aye.
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 Thank you for catching.
I use that street, so I wanted to know.
Any other questions? Would anyone from the public like to speak? Discussion? Please call the roll.
Council Bill 218-11 as amended. Ms. Hobby?
Yes.
David?
Yes.
Mr. Schmidt?
Yes.
Mr. Thornhill?
Yes.
Mr. Kespel?
Yes.
Mr. Dudley?
Yes.
Ms. Anthony?
Yes.
Report 206-11.
We have introduction and first reading.
Introduction and first reading.
All bills are introduced by the mayor unless otherwise indicated. Bills 356-11, 357-11, 358-11, 359-11, 360-11, 361-11, 362-11, 363-11, 364-11, 365-11, 366-11, 367-11, and 368-11, first reading.
Report 206-11 is a comprehensive list of recommendations from staff about our boards and commissions. Before we get into these, I'd sort of like to get the council's sense of how we should go about this. Rather than vet each of these individually, it's sort of my feeling that these recommendations ought to go back to each involved board and commission for their input. Because I rather suspect that some of these will be objected to, some of these will be accepted, and I think we, you know, I think we all agree they deserve the courtesy of input into what we decide.
Yeah, already received a little bit of feedback. I think that would be.
Let me start with a couple of them that we may not, that may be pretty simple. The Conley Poor Fund doesn't really exist anymore.
That's right.
And there's a little fund balance that needs to be transferred.
And the health department has been using that as needed over time, and what we really need to just get to the bottom of is what to do with that moving forward, and either we transfer that to the community foundation to kind of create a endowment type situation, or because of how much money is left, it wouldn't take very long to spend it all anyway. So we're at that point where do we just put it into a line item in the health department, or do we put it in and try to create something bigger out of it?
How much is in there?
$142,000 is left.
I would sort of favor transferring it to the community foundation. I mean, that was the sort of the, I guess, the will and intent of the initial donations
to mission, and so it
right.
would sort of carry it on.
I don't know what the other council members think about that. I don't know if this, does he need a motion on this?
I think we'd actually need an agreement with the foundation.
Mm-hmm. And presumably, I was going to ask if there are any family members or friends or something that would have an opinion, but presumably they would be represented by whoever is running the foundation.
So can
yes,
you?
No, maybe.
And so what we could come back to you with is that agreement with the community foundation. What it would spell out is, you know, how it would operate, what would their charge be to manage those funds, and that sort of arrangement.
Okay. And then it would also specify that it would go to some, I mean, deserving poor mission.
Right. That's right. That's the
something that was as parallel to the initial Conley Fund.
It could be almost identical.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. The community foundation is very flexible that way.
So you'll approach them and come back to us with
if that's the will of the council, I'll do it.
Is that a consensus of the council? Object? Anybody objects? The Army Board, is it not occupied at this point?
Both of those, the Army Board is it's a group that has been without membership for over a decade. So we believe the time, the era of the need for that has passed.
Is that will that take an ordinance change? Do you need a motion from us?
We need direction if you want us to prepare an ordinance.
Is consensus good enough? Can you read consensus? Okay. Is there any objection to that? The Community Cooperation Board, is that also empty?
Right. It has been for over a decade. So, we're recommending we just kind of delete that one.
Any objection from the council? Public Communications Resources Advisory Committee?
This is one I would recommend getting input. Now, it's not funded, wasn't funded last year, but it has fairly recently been staffed and done work. Might be good to get
input. So you're going to ask for input about on all these that we ask for input, are we going to ask, what are we going to ask of these boards, particularly the ones with mergers? Are we going to ask them?
We could refer this and ask for their reactions, thoughts.
Okay.
And leave it open
there,
and compile it. Yeah.
There may be boards that wish to dissolve for all we know. I want to point out for the when we were doing the boards and commissions appointments, if you look at the list that's part of the agenda packet, many members of the public serve on multiple boards, and so we want input from the public, but we don't want to tax members of the public too much with too many meetings, so we may
find some
boards that want to dissolve that we don't know about.
Possibly. You know, we have 61 boards that are covered in this document. The staff view of it, which is just another step in a long conversation. We've kind of had a conversation for about 2.5 years. This is, to me, another topic, sort of a group of staff has weighed in on what it sees. So of those 61, the staff recommendation would sort of alter the mission, perhaps, maybe update the mission would be a way to say that, of 7 of those. It would merge 11 of them into other boards where you have, and that's where you have quite a bit of overlap in mission. And then it would delete 8 of them, so the 3 we've already talked about, for example. And it would also create 3 new ones, given the recommendation of the Vision Committee and other thinking informs that. And so it would leave 33 of them pretty much the way they are today. And what you end up with is 43 boards rather than 61 boards. And just from a staff perspective, of course, if you average it out, now some boards require quite a bit more staff support than others, but if you average it out, it's about half an FTE per board to support just the workload, right? Just the create the agenda, follow up on those decisions, keep the minutes, file the minutes, create the next agenda, et cetera. Getting meeting space, all that. So
I'm sorry,
add it up, and it's a significant sort of force multiplier for staff time.
Let me talk about 2 more that you talked about eliminating. Internet Citizens Advisory Group, you're going to ask them, but, you know, we're in an era now of not just do we have internet, do we have broadband.
Right.
And they are sort of engaged in that. So I suspect they will, they feel as though they have a role in pushing high-speed broadband. The Stormwater Advisory Commission, they have a job to propose ordinance changes. I suspect that they're going to want to stay in existence because there have been suggestions to create a revenue stream from stormwater fees. And, you know, I talked to one of them today, and they probably want to stay in. But, again, you're going to approach them and ask for their advice. And as far as the mergers, that's self-explanatory. You're going to present that to the various boards and commissions, and they will object, agree, or have other ideas. Anything else?
This presumably, I was curious here, actually, the Water and Light Advisory Board, is that one that you... Because that's one that's in the charter.
Yes. There's an idea to, you know, maybe merge the railroad board with Water and Light, but that would take quite a bit of effort. All of these ideas take some follow-up and effort on council and staff's part.
I'm that surprised
would take a charter
saying,
change.
Yeah, right, because a couple of them are specified by charter. This would be a good time, too, anything that, if we're going to do anything by ordinance to... there may be boards that are functioning, but like the contractors board, we have a hard time filling that because the ordinance that creates them is a little too specific. You know, they have to have different areas of expertise, and some boards have rules that they come from different wards. And we also have quorum issues. And insofar, like if we went from 60 boards to 40 boards, and found that I'm going to guess we would have the same number of citizens participating because so many are on multiple boards if they're well chosen. And you may find boards that have currently or in the past had nearly the same membership as others. That's where they may have a better idea of whether to merge is to actually look at the people involved as opposed to you know, sort of council's idea or staff's idea of what things conceptually go together.
No, it's an excellent point, one we looked at fairly quickly, and I'll give you an example. The building codes has quite a bit of overlap with plumbing, electrical, and mechanical, as you might
yeah.
guess. So that thus resulted in the staff thought that, you know, maybe those 4 don't need to be identified as specific boards. Maybe they could merge all those functions into one and still provide the the benefits of having a board for that, but one meeting instead of four.
Right, exactly.
So this is an initiative. You'll carry this forward to the boards at interest.
Yep.
Is there any, I think it's a worthy initiative. Is there any objection to this initiative?
Oh, I have no objection, but there is a recommendation by the visioning report to create one or two new authorities or commissions, one specifically the Land Preservation Authority, that really won't be referred to any existing commission. And so whether we want to...
I thought they talked about putting that in sustainability.
Not Land Preservation Authority.
The staff thinking is, you know, quite honestly, the private sector does this so well. You think of the Nature Conservancies and the Greenbelt Coalitions, that perhaps a partnership would accomplish the goal in a more effective way than having the city be the sole driver of that effort throughout the community. So our recommendation really is to explore creating something like that, but not our own commission, more of a partnership with another identity, group of organizations.
I had a question on the Landscape and Tree Board. Will that work in conjunction with Parks and Rec and the city, Public Works, or will they be working with public property or private property, both? What do you envision that one doing? I see it working either as part of Parks and Rec or in,
yeah,
getting advice from.
The staff view is there's quite a bit of overlap, as you're, you know, with a lot of other ideas, and so you could almost put it in one of about five other areas. We sort of like the idea of creating this sustainability commission, which would be kind of a rebranded Environment Commission with a few more things added to its mission, its purview. So this would be one of those that staff would say this is a perfect fit for sustainability, the bigger umbrella. I think, were you not quite finished, Barbara?
Yeah, I wasn't. I was just going to say it's the Greenbelt Land Trust, not the Greenbelt Coalition. But maybe on that one, you're just requesting to explore the possibility of working with groups of stakeholders. So I would say to go ahead and explore the possibility and then come back to council.
As you know well, some of the great partners in Missouri are the state, and both in the DNR and conservation. So that's the kind of organizations you're talking about, I think, in addition to Greenbelt and others.
Right, yeah, right. So we can leverage what is done and focus in a unified way what is done.
So we have 11 that we're recommending we merge. Some folks would read that as delete the one I'm on, which I guess would be the effect of some of them. So are those the ones, or would you like us to communicate with all currently sitting boards?
Right, yeah. Because many people serve on multiple boards, and there may be boards that wish to dissolve that we haven't considered or wish to merge.
Gather that input.
I'll just comment on the Planning and Zoning Commission. I know we've spoken many times about how onerous the obligation is already, and to have them be required to sit on other boards and commissions is, at least it's been discussed. I guess we should reaffirm it because we have so many new members, but it's been discussed consistently that it's just much of a burden to ask for them to not only do their duties on P&Z but also sit on other boards.
I don't remember if that's in the charter or an ordinance. If it's in an ordinance, this would be a good time to fix that. If it's in the charter that they have to be liaisons, that's going to be okay. Good.
Very good. Very good work. Any other comments? Okay, you proceed. We'll look forward to the results. 207 and 208 are together and reflect the findings, recommendations of the parking task force, and that there are four recommendations. One, that the access and revenue control system for the Sheriff Street Garage be a gated pay on foot, which means a gate that lifts, you put a card or a credit card in there and it lifts. You don't have to hunt for the central box.
Now, the pay on foot is you get a ticket when you go in, and then you pay at the box, and then when you go out, you put your shit or ticket in that shows you paid, and it lets you out.
Okay.
That's the pay on foot.
Second is a test of two meter methodologies. The companies have agreed to provide that, I guess, huh?
Third, we've been talking to them. We have to get to find out how much that costs, because it needs a credit card validation to see what we can do. They can do it wirelessly, but we got to get with the phone company as well.
One's a multi-space cement of the block one. The other one's just going ahead and put it on
each meter post. Mm-hmm.
And the third is putting credit card adaptability on the garages. And the fourth is a sign on Short Street Garage showing how many spaces are available. And the cost of these initiatives?
I think the electronic sign we show has been around $70,000 for the second option, every level. One would probably be around $18,000. The pay on foot, we got figured the control cost around $233,000, but we get software with that at an extra $114,000, so that's a little bit more than we had budgeted for in the Short Street Garage, but the $233,000 is under what we have budgeted, so we think we can do that. As far as the mid-block and those, we're still evaluating, trying to get all the prices ironed out on that. I do need to get with the finance director on all the credit card stuff to ensure that this is possible and that he's there's no hidden fees in there that we haven't looked at.
We can infer that you'll come back to us with concrete recommendations.
Oh, yes. Then.
One question on the electric signs. I assume that those are modest size signs.
Yes, ma'am. They have to be able to be legible from the street. So, I mean, they're not going to be very small, but they won't be they won't be taking up the whole side of the building.
We'll want to see what those
exactly.
Look like.
Exactly. Okay. I will want to have a one here that you can feel and touch.
Okay. Any other comments, Council? The next report is 209. Parking on Heather Lane.
This item is really a recommendation to prohibit parking on Heather Lane from Broadway to Ash, but just on the east side, so not both sides, on the east side. There was a pretty good process, and that's what the folks on Heather Lane would like, and staff concurs.
Comments? How about a motion to direct staff to prepare an ordinance to amend Ordinance 14324, prohibiting parking on the east side of Heather Lane from Broadway to Ash Street at all times.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed say nay. 210-11. I find this is an interesting report.
I was very surprised by it. At this point, it's, excuse me, pardon my cold. I keep coughing. It's really an informational report on some research we did. Program.
Very good research, by the way, and it points out that the AARP is in the business of selling insurance profitably, and NLC is getting a little money from CVS Caremark for these, but it's fascinating to look at the research you did on the cost of these drugs and how much cheaper it is generically at a lot of the local stores already.
That's right, and I really want to commend the HR department. They did all the work there.
Good work.
So, and I had a question on that. Yeah, I thought the chart was very interesting. So are these pretty representative of prescriptions across the board? I just want to make sure that
I think
these aren't unique.
Lipitor, for example, I think is the number one drug in our system.
We went through and looked at classes of drugs in our program that are the highest ones. Yeah, you've got Paxil and Lipitor. Of course, Lipitor and penicillin and the orthotricycline, those are all drugs that we use.
And Lipitor has gone generic.
It did, and I did a dance.
It will be shockingly lower soon.
It's already starting to make a difference. We're really excited about that.
Right.
So yes, these are common drugs in our employee population.
So this is informational, and there's no recommendation to proceed with this.
No, not at this point.
211-11. This is about
really an informational report on. Yeah, you got it. Just informational, really.
Questions? Analysis of traffic patterns at Forum.
This is where, right at the break time gas station, and so this study observed that due to adjusting the timing at the intersection of Stadium and Forum, no right turn on red restrictions are really recommended at this time, because that those changes made everything work a little better, slower wait times, etc. So the recommendation is no changes at this time. Is what?
Very good for you, Helen.
Yeah, it's fine with me. I don't think I requested this one.
No. 213 is
the number's pretty low there.
Analysis of Grand Avenue and Austin Avenue.
This is our ongoing effort to clean up all of the sort of old requests. This one's a little more recent. That an all-way stop at the intersection of Grand Avenue and Austin. We have a two-way stop there now, and after the analysis, it just doesn't appear to warrant more stop signs from a staff level.
We did install a no parking here at a corner for about 75 feet to limit the parking close to the intersection.
I met a lady called me about this. I met her up there, and I think that's exactly what I needed. The visibility was just difficult with the parking, so thanks.
Great.
214 is the cost of sidewalks.
This is more recent, and I think Councilmember Thornhill was, yeah. So this was the answer to the question.
So I'm still a little fuzzy on this. I'll use Scott Boulevard for an example. The site's $3.05 is the per square foot cost for that project, which would indicate that our $4 payment in lieu is plenty. But then when you look at the last paragraph in the article about on development adjacent to a roadway that was unimproved previously and not planned to be improved, the costs can run considerably higher. So that section of Scott was not improved.
Correct.
So is it fair to say that the $4 didn't cover it? Or
those costs that are in the $3 are only for the concrete piece, the mm-hmm. concrete 4 inches. That included any grading, anything that base it goes under it, whatever. So if you have an unimproved street and you go in and put a sidewalk on, there's a lot more grading that has to be done that drives the price of that sidewalk up. With Scott, we were doing grading all the way out, and so that's why that ran low. Had we put a sidewalk on without doing the road project, it would have been much higher. That's what that means.
So in your opinion, does $4 sound right? I still think it's not enough.
If it's in conjunction with a road project that we're going to do within the near future, I think it's fine. I think if you're asking for somebody to, if we're not going to do a road project, I'll just say something on Proctor or something like that in the future, no, it would not be enough.
Well, and the other thing is this is $3 a foot is just the concrete.
Yes.
Whereas if they were required to build a sidewalk, it would actually cost them more than the, even if it, you know, if it was, if they weren't making the payment in lieu but actually doing the sidewalk, even on an improved street, that they would be paying more because of the mulching and the other cost line items.
Potential that they'd have to do grading is going to cost you more than $3 mm-hmm. or $4 for sure.
And I guess basically the philosophy is not their fault if grading is needed.
So as a, just to follow up, is our current practice, or going for our future practice on this, if we do have an improved roadway, I'm just wondering if we're going to be able to, if we can start collecting more where appropriate and not fall back on this, you know, automatic $4 per square foot per sidewalk. Are we going to establish a second tier?
Certainly do that. It makes sense to me that there are two kinds of projects here, really, and maybe there ought to be two kinds of rate.
Absolutely. I feel that we're losing money on some of these projects, and have felt that way for a very long time as being a planning and zoning commissioner.
So, I
think one of the things that I would look at it is if we're not going to do a street very in the near future, that they go ahead and build it instead of paying money for it. That would be much better on us, because we don't know what it's going to cost to put in the future, because they're paying dollars to put it in on that roadway, not me giving me dollars to spend it somewhere else.
It's not actual cost realistically, unless you're coming in tomorrow,
right,
and grading and pouring concrete.
But I'm thinking about the projects that we have going on in the southwest corner, where, you know, to ask them when we know we're going to widen, let's just take Copperstone, for example, you know, where we know we're going to widen, you know, Scott eventually, and then to have them build a sidewalk that we're going to come and rip up, it just doesn't make any sense.
I understand, and that's what I said. We're going to build a road in the very near future for those. If you're not building the road, though, we take this even when we're not building the road sometimes.
But we really do need to develop a new practice and policy on this.
We'll take a look. I'm seeing a consensus there.
The other thing that I've not ever understood, and you've probably told me the answer in the past and I forgot, is why can't the payments in lieu be used somewhere where a sidewalk is needed now, and then, you know, why can't you shift money around? There's some rule that you can't move the payments in lieu, because you're holding the payments in lieu, and then there are sidewalks that are needed that could be built in other places, and I don't know why the money can't be shifted around somehow, but, you know.
More of a philosophical question.
Maybe we can take that up offline.
Really more of a legal question, actually.
Oh.
When it's in exaction, when you're requiring someone as part of the subdivision or any development process to give money, if it's not a tax, then it's an exaction. If it's a tax, you have other problems, you know, Hancock Amendment votes and all that. But on an exaction, you can do it, but you have to spend the money within a reasonable period of time on something.
Can't we define what's reasonable?
You don't want to really define reasonable, or you wind up giving more money back than you would otherwise.
Yeah, well, let's not define it then.
and it has to be in relation, there has to be a rational nexus between what you're exacting and what the development is.
I see, and this is so exactions don't get out of hand. I'm presuming that's the basis,
right,
of the
law. This, actually, their Missouri case law on this, going back to the 70s, but I think after that, the U.S. Supreme Court basically adopted the same rules.
Yeah, it was a nice idea, but thanks.
There is a larger philosophical question we could explore at some point in the future. Why is a sidewalk different than a road? You know, it
conveys
traffic. So it's, I won't delay the meeting tonight.
So then could we get a second look at what you think would be a reasonable approach to the two different ways that these, okay. I'm all for giving, you know, not wasting effort and concrete and resources, you know, when we know we're going to be there soon, but you can still compensate the city a little closer to actual cost and give the developer a break for not having to do the work, and they can get a better. This is a pretty good deal for the developer in some cases.
And a lot of times, if we're not there, and I'll just use Walnut, we had to put in a retaining wall on that particular project. So, I mean, it does drive up the cost.
Come back.
The next report is 215, which is
one of those beautiful reports where you can hear the silo walls falling and joint communication and water and light working together on basically different parts of a fiber optic system. So I'll have
Simon Ryan, talk about that.
Yeah, staff from Public Safety, Joint Communications, and Water and Light had identified an opportunity to use the expertise in each department to basically enhance the fiber optic system and the radio systems for each department. We're basically going to provide support for some fiber optic equipment that Public Safety and Joint Communications is going to be using to further expand their system, and they're going to help us with our radio needs. I'd be happy to answer any questions beyond that.
Great.
Questions? Very self-explanatory. Thank you very much. Work. Transfer of funds.
This is the usual report on transfer of funds. Fairly straightforward there.
Comments, questions? He'll have an opportunity in just a second. This is the last report.
Oh, yes.
He's getting ready. He's stretching. Okay. I'll yield to a public comment.
My name is John Clark. I live at 403 North 9th Street. I'm an attorney specializing in not-for-profit matters and also CPA. But recently, of course, you all had to deal with the fine issue of cronking and so forth. And this is just the most recent example of a really out-of-whack code enforcement mechanism in our city. And hopefully we got somebody coming from a city that's much better. The notion that an administrative officer could waive a fine that is imposed by law and does it, as opposed to having policy and procedures in place that simply say, you do that, we assess the fine, and if the person thinks there's good reason they shouldn't be subject to it, there's an appeals process and they go through it. Why the council had to be involved, why Tim Teddy thought he had the authority. If our rules and procedures around code enforcement, and I'm treating this as a code enforcement issue, it may be a different area, I must admit, then we are in far worse shape than I can imagine. On the other hand, we used to deal with public works on, and we take down reams of paper about houses that were out of compliance and all this kind of stuff, and a guy at that time by the name of Steve Redmond. Now, this has somewhat improved since then. All of our complaints were noted on a yellow pad. At that time, they were not entered in a computer. Just like this, all of this stuff was completely invisible to anybody. It was even invisible to anybody who might want to administer the department. It is that kind of procedure where, in fact, there's not an application of law. You issue the citation, you do that. And if somebody wants to appeal, now, if we don't have the right appeal procedures, we need to change them. But this is way beyond offensive. It really makes a joke out of the whole idea of the rule of law. So I would ask the council to direct the city manager to basically propose a solution to correct these flaws, because they are rampant. I mean, the thing with Kroenke was just there and it was visible. This is an everyday thing. It has been an everyday thing for the 20 years I've been dealing with the city and maybe back before then. It's time to change that. The second thing has to do with the parking garage. I must admit, I was quite interested in hearing, you know, I'm glad to hear actually people have understood if our downtown is growing on, we're going to need more public parking, especially if we give everybody C2. So approving 410, my guess is you looked at this, you probably need 500 or 590. If you're looking just beyond next year or beyond 2 years, and you found some information that people are pay rates. And what I heard was, well, we can't think about anything higher because we have a deal with Regency and Parma. I'm sorry. The council and the city has leaned over backwards. I mean, just think about, this is a TIF project, isn't it? And we've leaned over backwards. I would strongly recommend that you go to them and simply say, we need to amend that agreement. I assume this has to do with people in the parking lot not looking down on the swimming pool or something on top. You could easily deal with that with barriers. Seriously consider taking this up to 7 stories. Maybe not 8, but 7. Because on any kind of 10-year projection, based on your own information, we need the parking. And fiscal responsibility, as well as environmental responsibility, says we need to get as many parking spaces downtown per building square foot on the ground as possible. Anything else is, let's see, it just throws economic reality out the window. Any idea about where we can actually responsibly plan 2 or 3 years in advance, and it's just fiscally irresponsible. Now's the time to change it. I don't think hanging on to something where the Regency says something about something, I think that would be just a minor thing to change. And the last thing I'd ask Mr. Kespel to proceed on, we're issuing a lot of new bonds. I'd like to hear the report on old bonds and new bonds, and basically backloading the interest and the enormous cost, and that and the rationale for that, because I think it has really harmed people in the city to do that. I'm hoping it's different, but I haven't heard anything said about it yet. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Clark.
May I make just one comment about the intersection issue with Kroenke Group? It won't be long. So as you remember, staff took some time, and that was mostly my time, to really research the issues at play there, came back recommending a course of action that council at the end of that day disagreed with about that location, but in the larger sense did agree with. So there was this piece in the zoning code where Columbia was significantly different than many cities, and there's no temporary use permit allowable. So the decision of the council was to go ahead and come back with an ordinance that would begin to allow temporary use, but at this time, it's not an allowable use, and so very clearly the council's will was to enforce the ordinance. And so staff immediately then did that, and now we still owe, no matter who it is, some process. I'll look to Fred to underscore our thought process. So there was no just ignore what the council said by any stretch, although some press is trying hard to make it seem that way. In point of fact, that was the extent that we could do, which was we had to communicate a deadline date by which to act. In this case, they did do that. They acted in time, so there was no fine then levied. And we that is our go-to move, so to speak. That's when someone does violate an ordinance, and there's no thought process about changing that particular ordinance, then there's a time given to cure that problem. And once that's missed, that's when fines start to accrue.
I have one brief comment on that matter. I'm sure the council understands this. I'm not sure that all the public does, but the council does not impose fines. If a fine is going to be imposed for an ordinance violation, there has to be charges filed in municipal court, and the judge establishes a fine. I think there's been some statements in the public that misunderstand that. I think maybe because of language was used, they thought that the council imposed a fine and staff ignored it. In point of fact, the council doesn't do fines, that's the municipal court's function. And if there's any criticism, it can be, you know, legitimate criticism on staff for not pursuing it sooner, or you know, maybe there's not as vigorous enforcement of some ordinances as people would like, but that's not the council ignoring not the staff ignoring council. It's a matter of the staff taking the initiative and pursuing things in municipal court.
All right, well, thank you for clarifying that, because yes, we were discussing that, and it would be a bad thing if we could arbitrarily impose fines on people for things.
In very plain English, the way I understood it was, city manager had to give notice that you have 15 days to cease and desist this activity according to statute, and that had never been done before until you did it.
Right, staff
3 weeks ago.
Right, staff wrote a letter very early. I can't remember the exact July date, July, that said, hey, this is a violation of the zoning code, what you're doing. So then the construction company involved, I can't think of it now, McCarthy, thank you, appealed to me to basically call out a few items which we've discussed in the past. And those did seem compelling to me at the time, so I took the initiative to communicate with everyone involved, the university, McCarthy, neighbors around the area, and that's what took so long. So what some folks see as a no action was actually quite a bit of background work to really understand what's going on here, are there better options. So at the end of the day, we came then to council with that recommendation. Given, you know, anyone that feels like council's not in charge, that's the perfect example. We disagreed, and your decision is the one that we went forward with. So, no, I mean, so that's a fairly simple description, I guess.
Thank you.
Understood.
Good evening, City Council, City staff and mayor. My name is Charles Dudley Jr. I live at 1201 Packland Street, and I'm a disabled citizen of Columbia, Missouri. And being full disclosure here, I'm a disability commissioner of the city of Columbia, Missouri. I come before you tonight as a disability commissioner appointed by you, the city council, to represent in all good standing not only the disabled population of the city of Columbia, but all citizens of the city of Columbia and their best interests. I found nowhere in the city ordinance or city charter or commission ordinances that plainly states I cannot become before you, nor am prohibited to come before you, the city council, the city staff, in this manner as I am presenting here before you and the public. At this time, I would like to make a formal and open public request for any and all information regarding the past cities that the company that owns and operates the Columbia Star Dinner Train has operated in and the outcomes of those ventures in those cities. I've been informed that this company has run upwards of 13 of these types of trains in the past by my sources who have researched this latter statement, but have been unable to find any proof of this on their own research, nor by asking other similar train companies around the nation they inquired of, who have told them they have not heard of this company nor its manager. One would think that any company running upwards of 13 trains, such as this one, now here in Columbia, they would be known as a known company. I would like to see the results of this open, formal, and public request to be also forwarded to all respective city commissions involved in this issue, businesses involved in this issue, and all news media outlets as a matter of public record. I personally believe the above information is a reasonable request for information from city staff due to, from the beginning, this entire train venture was pushed through quite quickly without some commissions being notified, i.e. the City of Columbia Disabilities Commission. And also being this visit adventure was taken on by the City of Columbia with city taxpayer-funded money incentives, operating on city taxpayer-funded rail lines, and deserves, yes, and is entitled to full disclosure of all past business ventures operated by this company now in a contract with the City of Columbia, so the community knows where and what had been going on with all the players in this venture, past and present. It is a matter of full disclosure, which was not researched from the very beginning, and full transparency of business that the citizens of Columbia are due. I do not want to see this dinner train shut down, as some have accused me of and have tried to keep me silent over, but I do not feel full disclosure and full transparency in this entire issue has been followed in this entire venture. If you read the Tribune here, I believe it was last Saturday or Saturday before, right after the City of Columbia Disability Commission, my commission was not quite happy with me at all and reacted quite hatefully at my simple request. The question might be, why the angry reaction, or what is there to hide? I ask of you, the City Council, if you so choose to discuss and vote on this request, to direct city staff to research and provide all the information asked for above, and to be released to all of the above entities in a timely manner and in no later than a 30 to 45 day period from this time. Thank you for your time and your understanding in this issue. And do you have any questions of me?
Thank you, Mr. Dudley.
I guess, what exactly is it that, I mean, it sounds like this could be background on a company, how far, what type? I mean, this could be pretty extensive.
Yeah, because in the beginning from this venture, nothing was ever disclosed about the background of this company to the citizens here in Columbia. They said they came in here, they said they've run 13 other trains like this in other cities, but no information was provided to the public by the city or the Convention and Visitors Bureau or anybody who was involved in this venture. And it was done with city taxpayer-funded money incentives. So the city citizens of this of Columbia, I do believe, deserve some information on the background of this company and how long these ventures have lasted with these 13 other supposed trains they've run. Are these ventures still going? You know, and other pertinent information. I don't want to see this train closed down, but I think we all need to know the background of the operation and the company.
When I remember talking to him, and he did mention these other trains, have you tried just calling them up and asking them? Because they might just tell you what other trains they run.
I've emailed their lawyer and have never had a response.
Never had a response.
I've had friends of mine who have researched and called them and had quite the reaction of quit asking questions. Huh. I have an email at home. I can email every councilman here that will be full disclosure.
Yeah, we really don't need the details. You've already tried the obvious, so.
So I'm just asking that city council direct city staff to research and ask this company for full disclosure on these where they've operated these trains before and how their outcome is now. Are they still going? Are they still running? How long were they in these cities? It's just a basic, simple answer for information. I tried to ask this at my disability commission and was rather rudely treated over this. My chairman got rather upset.
Thank you, Mr. Dudley. Anybody else?
My name is Carl Scala, 5201 Gasconade Drive. Mr. Mayor, City Council, City Manager. I initially came here to speak to the issue of the recommendations for the boards and commissions. I currently serve as the chairman of the Environment and Energy Commission, but I want to thank you instead for referring the mayor's suggestion to refer this back to the commissions and the council's endorsement of that recommendation. I will take that back to the commission for that purpose. I did want to just point out one thing. There are several boards and commissions. The Environment and Energy is one of them that has county members. So there is some intergovernmental involvement with the county members, and I might suggest that we take that up as well with the county commission and how they feel about this with regard to the notification and the feedback that's necessary. Other than that, I've served on the Environment and Energy Commission since 1999 and currently serve as well. So I really appreciate the fact that we're going back to the boards and commissions. Other than that, I just wanted to say happy holidays and a Merry Christmas and Happy New Year to the mayor and all of the members of the council. And I'd be happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Thank you, Carl. Anybody else? Council comments.
I was just going to follow up on two speakers. The one who was concerned about his home being burglarized during Thanksgiving and mentioned that there were 22 homes burglarized. I know that the police department has previously informed council many years ago about what they're doing with the public to help prevent burglaries during the holiday season. So I just wanted to inquire about, is that still easily accessible on the web, or do we need to do more of that? Is it getting worse? Is it getting better?
Well, believe it or not, and it's hard to say this, and crime rates are dropping. A lot of folks, if you're a victim, it doesn't feel like that, right? So we will double check to make sure they're easily available. The frustrating thing with burglaries is it's such a volume business, right? By the time you catch and arrest a burglar, it's not as if they've committed that act once. This is one of those crimes where they commit it often. And so usually, if you catch a burglar, you solve 15, 20, 30 burglaries. In fact, we just saw this recently. So it's a very frustrating part of the work. But we'll double-check on how available. And we, by the way, I should mention, we are actively engaged. That's one of the best prevention steps we can take, is when we remind folks on the holidays things they can do to keep their home safe.
Right, reduce the likelihood of them being burglarized. And then I wanted to follow up with Mike Onofrio mentioned about the trail, the county house phase two, and there he mentioned that there was an alternative planned that apparently Parks wasn't recommending, but I just wanted to make sure that alternative is coming before council also so we can consider both. I understand it's coming before us in January or February, so we'll get the alternative as well, or if you could check on that.
I'll definitely check, yeah.
All I have.
Well, I'll tag on to Barb since she brought it up about the, I just jumped on Go Columbia Mo under the police department. There's a burglary prevention tips page. It's got about 10 tips, and it's also neighborhood watch contact, security evaluation form, and then another inventory of your property form. So looks like it's pretty easy to find. So since I'm already talking, could we get, I'm not sure exactly what sort of form to ask for Mr. Dudley, but I guess whatever Tony might have with regard to the other locations the dinner train is operated in. Okay. And they're, I guess, their success rate. So we've got some sort of info. Oh, and then I'm not sure what type of report to ask for here. But we got, I think the whole council received an email from someone wanting some clarification on the leash or the tethering ordinance and the permitting process for having a dog in the city limits. So if we could just get some kind of brief summary on what that is, just for clarification, if nothing else.
Oh, I got something to talk about in your ward. Can I talk about it? I'd like to get some information concerning the proposed right-in, right-out onto 4th Boulevard at Wilson's and the Country Club and Lakeshore Drive, Shoreside Drive. I've been flooded with phone calls and emails from people that I have, some I know and some I don't know, about that situation. I'd like to have information on possibility of putting a roundabout in at Forum at Wilson's entrance and moving their entrance to the south, if there's room in there. What it does to bike lanes as far as PedNet goes. Just an overall assessment of that situation out there. I think the no left turns in and out of all those areas is probably not going to work. We're probably going to have to come up with something else, establish a left turn lane or something. But I'd like to get information about it so I can.
I wouldn't mind jumping in on this. as you recall, the reason that report came forward is because I requested it. I had no idea that it was going to be scheduled for a public information meeting, you know, in the middle of December, without asking me, since I did the report, asked for the report. I had merely wanted to start a discussion amongst the residents that live, you know, in that area, so that we could discuss possibilities. I do not think that what's proposed currently is going to work either. But what I did, you know, want to do is have this discussion about, I also have people in that neighborhood have contacted me and asked for a roundabout further up the hill at the intersection of Forum and Crestwood. And so I would like to, if it's all right with the rest of the council, I just merely wanted to have a meeting sometime in January not a public information meeting, but a meeting at the Country Club of Missouri so that we can, which is in the neighborhood. I would like to have, you know, if John's available and our, and Scott, whoever the traffic engineer people are, so we can just have a community discussion regarding this. And if the community doesn't want to make any changes or can't come to an agreement, then I think there isn't anything that's going to happen up there. I mean, my feeling, I was really upset about the way this went forward. I think it was a miscommunication between John and I, but I had no intention of this going forward, you know, in this manner. I had merely wanted to start a conversation. So, Gary, if it's all right with you, you know, maybe you can do it with me. Have, you know, we'll talk about a possible date and having a meeting. Because there's a, that issue goes all the way from Forum, Wilson's, all the way up to the intersection of Green Meadow and Forum. People want changes all the way along there, and I say let's just bring everyone together, see if we can come up with some viable options. Hopefully sit down with John before we have the meeting so that we can come up with a, you know, some alternatives to what he's proposed so far. But that's what I'd like to do.
When you really stop and look at that situation out there, I've thought about it a lot. There really aren't any north-south core roads to go on between Providence Road and Forum. They go all the way north-south. You have to take one of those routes. You have the same situation between Forum and Scott, and those are pretty far apart. It's just a matter of poor planning, I think. There should be some access in the middle of those somewhere to get north and south. It's probably too late to do anything about it now because it's developed, but that's the issue. People can't get, they have to go on already crowded streets to get north south, and when you put a business there with no left turn, we have a problem. So we just need a full study of all that.
Any other comments?
I have some, and that wasn't one of them either, but I just have another quick I've already asked for a report or a work session actually on how we can add some teeth, or are there some enforcement issues that we can do with neighborhood services based on the number of complaints at Regency? You know, I'd wanted to have a comprehensive overview of whether there's something we can do to strengthen those ordinances. We also need to take a look at the Beta House situation. You know, I think we made it an agreement or decided as a council to enforce our ordinances there, and really on appeal were turned down. I think we need to evaluate our code enforcement, frankly, an overview on, because I just think we're, you know, whether it's a process that we're not taking, I think we're enforcing them, and now we're finding that when we enforce them, we don't have the tools necessary to enforce them. So I think we really need to have a comprehensive look at that, at how do we need more tools to enforce our ordinances. Secondly, I know the Smart Growth Conference is coming up in San Diego, February 2nd through 4th. I just want to know whether there's a budget for P&Z to send people. Don't know if there is or not, but I think there should be. I also would recommend any council people that have not attended a Smart Growth Conference. It's well worth it. Incredibly rich with content, stuff that we can use for almost every aspect of the business we do. I would urge any council members to attend.
Don't know off the top of my head, but I'm
they have a travel budget. I can't tell you how much, and I believe they've used it in the past. Okay. I don't know what, I doubt
so
anything.
It hasn't changed.
I don't, you guys didn't change anything good. From last
all
year.
Right. Good. All right. That's it. Oh, and one more thing. Mr. Scala wished us a happy holiday, but I wanted to thank the staff, city manager, Fred, the whole city staff for the outstanding job that you do for us as a city, and wish you a restful holiday.
Thanks.
And I had one more thing I overlooked. Last council meeting, or the one before it, there was a report regarding Buttonwood and eliminating parking on both sides, and I asked that staff get together with the owners and myself, and they did that, and they've come up with a solution. So we don't need another report. They'll just go ahead and implement this solution. Thank you, staff.
Anything else? Merry Christmas.